Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
When a coach tells you to do something, do it the best of your ability and do it with great detail and just make sure everything's done on time. And then do a little bit more.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Dan Ritter, assistant coach at Garden City Community College. Ritter's coaching journey began as a graduate assistant at Lincoln Memorial University before earning his current role at one of the premier junior college programs in the country, Garden City Community College. His path offers great insight for young coaches looking to break into the profession and continue climbing the ladder. In this episode, we discuss how he landed his first graduate assistant position despite having limited connections, the steps that led him from a GA role to his first full-time assistant coaching opportunity, and what makes Garden City Community College one of the most respected JUCO programs in the nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mage, say it, we're back with another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, alongside my guy, Garden City Community College assistant coach, ladies and gentlemen, Dan Ritter. Dan, welcome.
How we doing, guys? Thanks for having me. Appreciate to be here.
Yeah, you got it, man. Congrats as well, by the way.
Thank you.
Dano, so you have the experiences. First off, we're gonna take it back, okay? Another guy. I always like to bring out the fact that we got another guy from Youngstown. Another local for me, right? Hometown guy. But worked his way up. First off, I had the opportunity, and we're just going to let the cat out of the bag. I had the opportunity to coach him, right? So this is when I'm starting to get old, when now my players are becoming coaches. And yeah, now reality is starting to hit. But Dan was a hell of a player, played at Youngstown State, ended up helping us win a championship at Westminster College, and moved on. Dan, you get into you were in ticket sales with the Cavs, you were in business. And I bring this up because you changed your route, then you go into coaching. Mm-hmm. Why? I feel like that's the question for a lot of people is, first off, just why do you get away from the business side of things? Because I did it myself. What happens, some people are afraid to take that jump from a business, a full-time job into a GA or a coaching position. Like, why did you take that jump from a business-oriented job to then get into coaching?
No, yeah, for sure. So I was actually doing remote sales in my parents' basement, making decent money. Wasn't struggling, like paying off loans, just enjoying life. But I always wanted to get into coaching. When I was a kid, it's something I always followed. I always loved watching the March Madness. I always followed the big-time coaches. I was huge into all those college basketball documentaries that like ESPN would come out with. And I just always told myself, if I ever want to do something, that's something I would kind of want to do. But I knew nothing about the business. Like, we're from football is huge. It's just the way it is. So after I played 5 years, I was kind of just done with basketball. I was wore out. My last year, I think I played on a broken ankle for the last 20 games. It was just rough. So I didn't really put in time into looking into GA positions. So I ended up just getting a job doing remote sales. And then that urge just got back to me. And I was like, if I'm going to do this, I got to do it now. I can't wait 2 or 3 years. So I can't wait till you can. I've learned if you get in it sooner, it's better. You start as a manager, or you start right when you're done playing. But I had no connections. So I just coached at my high school for the year. I sat down with one of my mentors and we're like, okay, if we're going to do this, let's do it the right way. So we started emailing out hundreds of emails. Every time Hoop Dirt posted something, I was applying for it. I didn't care what level, D1, D2, D3. I told myself, if I find the right place, I'm going to take it. And it took a while. I had a couple good offers, but when you get a job like LMU coming around, I tell myself I got pretty lucky with it because, again, I had no connection. Oh, yeah. Normally, this is a relationship-based business. Everyone says it. You hear it on every podcast. But that's really how it started. Had a few calls with them in July, and then it just went off from there.
Wow. Did somebody suggest it to you at some point about coaching? It sounds like it may be came about organically, just your interest, but
it's in the blood. He's gonna probably say, oh no, it's in the blood. He's got family that has coaching and they've been around it.
Yeah, it really started with my high school coach, because like I was growing up in high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but the only thing, I wasn't the biggest fan of school. Everyone told me I should go be a teacher, which is great. And I was like, I don't know if I'd want to do that. Wasn't ever smart enough to go be a doctor or a lawyer. But the one thing I always loved doing was in high school with my coach was watching film. So that's when I really got intrigued in it. And I really started to look up the business, see how it was. And yeah, I come from a long line of coaches. My uncle was a women's coach at Cardinal Mooney. My dad coached us growing up. My uncle John was a director of ops for YSU football. So I was always around something with coaching. And it just gave me that itch to do it. But again, like I said, I had no connections with it. I had to figure it out on my own. Had to prepare my resume really just to get my foot in the door at that late in the stage. So that's where I was at that time.
Yeah, yeah. What was your first experience like? Was it, let me backtrack a little bit. What was the moment where you said enough is enough of this remote thing? And then you wanted to.
It was kind of like halfway through the season for high school. I sat myself down. I was like, okay, like this is cool. Like I can make a decent money doing this, but when I'm 30, 35. I want to do something that I want to get up and be excited to do every day. And I just didn't have that with remote sales and cold making 100 cold calls. So that's when it was like probably mid-season high school. I, again, sent down with my mentor. I was like, all right, if I'm going to do this, let's do it now. Let's do it right. And I'm glad I did it. I really am.
Had zero connections, and then you end up getting a role at LMU, that's in your GA role, just to clarify for everyone. And how, if you have those no connections, how did you get lucky with this LMU role? Because I'm sure there's people out there in the same boat. I was the same thing. I had no connections. My first job was actually with Westminster. But the only reason I knew Soroki and obviously Danilov was Soroki recruited me out of high school, and Danilov was my high school coach, but he wasn't there initially. A lot of things transpire, but for you, you didn't have any connections, and you get this high power end university in LMU, right? Great job. But how does that come about?
Yeah, it just, so here's what I did. Like I said, I went on basically Hoop Dirt. Every time something was posted, I would email the coach, but I wouldn't just send out mass emails. I would make sure my emails are scripted for that school and that coach. And all I told myself, all I need is a phone call. And every time I got a phone call from a coach, whether it's LMU or some other ones who call me, I did so much research on that team. So when he called me, I knew who the other coaches were. I knew what they did last season. I had great questions to ask, whatever I can just to stand out a little bit. Because LMU was 7 hours away. I couldn't like, I could have, but we just did a phone call interview basically. I wasn't going to drive down there for an interview. They didn't want me to do that. So every time, and it was like 3 or 4 calls with Coach Slick, Coach Jeremiah. I just studied and studied the history of that school, those coaches, where they've been, researched the kind of style they played, and just made sure my resume was on point with them just to stand out, just to get me one interview. Because I always told myself, I get one interview, I can get through this. And that's basically how it ended up working.
Wow. You don't realize it, but you're actually dropping some diamonds here for young coaches. And I'll be honest, out of almost 300 pods, we probably had, and this is our business, I don't think we've had 5 people with a story like yours. I recall a few where they just literally started from scratch. Somebody, just about everybody we've had on, started somewhere. It was, even if it was just a few contacts, but I really don't think we've had 5 people out of almost 300 pods that have just started from scratch the way you have. But you're saying some things that I think that young coaches that want to get into the business need to hear. One, you, even on Hoop Dirt, and you find this out really quick, sometimes by the time things are posted, it's already done.
They're already filled. So you just got to take the risk and be like, okay, let's see what happens.
But there's a thing called D2 and D3 timing. Mm-hmm. That's often different from D1 timing. And sometimes D2s and D3s, it's actually still open time it's posted. And a lot of times D1s, it's just a formality.
Yeah.
But you threw yourself into this process by just being willing to do whatever. And then the second thing that's great that young coaches need to know is when you do get an opportunity to visit with someone, please do your research. You don't have to know A to Z, but you definitely don't want to get on the phone or get on the Zoom and be like, so what you guys nickname again? The Fighting Ramblers? And it's, no, it's the Lions. You don't want to do that either, but you definitely want to make sure you get out in front of as much as you can, because again, that shows sincere interest in somebody else's situation.
Completely. No, being able to know what you're talking about definitely at least pushes the needle a little bit further and it separates you. Now, So you said you got an interview with them. I don't even think we've talked about this before. What did the interview process look like for you? How did they bring you in? Was it a virtual thing? What kind of questions? What did that look like?
Yeah, so the first phone call I had was with Tyler Slick, who's at Lamar now. Love him to death, one of the best in the business. He actually, I think he was on this pod when we were together at Illinois.
Oh, yeah. I've known Slick for a while. Shout out to Tyler Slick.
Love Tyler Slick.
He's a pod alum, no doubt.
He's a great guy. He called me, and it was the most in-depth conversation I've had ever about basketball. He was asking me questions about what are you trying to learn, style of play we do, how do we recruit, how we travel, the standard we go at. And we were on the phone for maybe 2 hours with him. And that was early July. And then I didn't hear anything for a month. And I had another one or two offers that weren't bad, but they weren't LMU once I did my research. So I kind of told myself, okay, I'm going to risk this a little bit. And then Jeremiah called me. Same thing. So in depth on what we're talking about, the day-to-day, what the GA responsibilities are. He gave us a lot of responsibilities. And also like what I want to learn, what are my goals, how can you help us? And then he called me week before, like late July. And then I had one more with him the week after. So it was all over the phone. And then once they decided to hire me, we got on a Zoom, they showed me the campus, and I was down there a week later.
Yeah. No,
it moves quick.
No, but thank goodness for D2 and D3 timing, honestly. And that's not a knock. I hope people at that level don't take it that as a knock. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it can be an advantage sometimes when you're a young guy, because typically their processes are a little bit slower, a little bit more deliberate. There's a little bit more red tape. They don't have the ability to just do what they want and then interview you after you've already been hired. A lot of times that's the way it is in D1. It's not even an interview. You know you're going to get it, but then they say, when I went to San Diego last year, for instance, I knew I was going to get it, but I had to basically go through about a 2-week, 3-week incubation period where they posted the job, and I was doing some internal stuff while I waited. But thankfully for you, you just kind of, you threw yourself into this thing, man. That, to me, I hope is what people pull from this, is you just had a relentless approach in terms of just saying, hey, I'm gonna take a shot. And thankfully, you landed at an incredible place as well.
Yeah, it was different, but I was so happy I got it because I learned so much down there. So, no, it was awesome.
Absolutely. I'm sure you did.
Dano's he's a grinder. He's a worker. There was one person, when I was a GA West Mini, I would say there's one, maybe two people, but him in particular, hit me up 6 a.m., 7 a.m., let's get in the gym. Doesn't care. He's like, hey, can we get in the gym? I'm like, okay. That's the one thing. And I remember somebody told me, you never say no to a player if they want to get in the gym. So I probably, especially 6 a.m. was a little tough sometimes for me because I wasn't the biggest of morning persons. But there was a lot of times Dan's like, hey, let's get in there. Okay. So he's a worker, and that doesn't surprise me in the least bit. But now you mentioned with especially being a GA and those duties, like now you're an assistant coach, Garden City Community College, one of the top, if not premier community colleges. You guys are like the university and the program speaks for itself. But as an assistant, what type of things, because I feel like, first off, let me finish my question. What type of things did you learn as a GA that filtered into an assistant role? Because I feel like a lot of times people want to overjump that GA position and they're too good for it, or they don't want to. What kind of things do you feel like looking at that GA role, if I didn't do that, I wouldn't know how to bring that into this assistant position?
No job is too big or too little. At LMU, I was doing every manager duty from folding laundry, getting groceries for the guys, restocking our stuff for guys to eat in the nutrition room, everything, mopping the floors, to assistant coach duties, clipping film, individual film, player development with the guys. So when I got here, I was a little more prepared because I was ready, because I'm the second assistant here. So I was like, okay, if I got to do some low man stuff, I'll do it because I've done it before and I know how to do it right. But I've also been blessed to do some assistant coach stuff too. That's what really prepared me for this position.
Yeah. No, it's the perfect step, and everybody's step is their own. No, I don't think anybody has the right to say their step is better than someone else's, but that's seamless to me to go from a GA to a JUCO grad, or not a great JUCO assistant coach. Is even though your title is assistant coach, some of the things are the same as far as, because JUCO staffs are usually limited. So Doug is at D3. I started D3. Like, your job title is whatever. And then that's it. You got a one-word job title, and then you're just ready to do whatever you need to do. So the humility that you brought to Garden City, to me, is the most important thing that I hope people pull, is that, yeah, your position changed, your title changed, but your mindset didn't. And because your mindset didn't change, now wherever you go from Garden City, is you're going to take that mindset with you. And then if they say, hey, it's an ops job and we need you to do this as an ops job, you'll be good to go when it comes time to, if the next thing's a D1 ops job.
I guess going from there, then the transition to Garden City, I want to ask about that, like getting a GA role. Cause I remember when we were talking, you didn't have a position, right? I remember me and you were having some conversations. You're like, I'm trying to get this next position. You go from a GA, you don't have anything. You're in that, like, that little middle ground where you're starting to freak out and you need something. Like, what did you do in that time in order to get that assistant position? I guess that's probably good.
Yeah, it was, again, like, I had more connections out of Alamu, but it was almost like I was restarting where I was to find a GA spot. I was applying for 50, 55 jobs and nothing, just couldn't get any. I got a few decent offers, but again, it was like, I need to find if I'm really going to do this, I got to find a place that I think that I can really excel at. I never thought I'd be in JUCO. I really didn't. I never thought I'd be in Kansas growing up, but it was funny. July came. So there was an old interim coach here last year. His name's Isaiah Tisdale. Now he's at Indiana State. He's best friends. Again, this is where the relationships comes in now. He's best friends with one of my assistants at LMU. So I got to know him pretty well. We got to know each other. He'd come to games and stuff. Met him at the Final Four a few times. So when Coach Assam got hired, head assistant got bumped up to first assistant, and this job opened up. So when I saw it opened up, I applied, same thing, made sure my resume tailored to this job. And I called Tisdale. He called me back, talked to Jack. And about a week later, Coach Assam got hired probably around the same time I got hired at LMU, late July. Coach Assam offered me the job. And next thing I know, a week later, I'm driving 18 hours to Southwest Kansas.
You know, what's great about this too, and again, for you, it's, you're just following your model, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't affect you at all in terms of timing and all that. But I think when I was talking to a coaching friend of mine the other day, who's still looking for something, and he's found something before well into like August, almost September. And for coaches that do get to that point, here we are, first week of August, and you start getting nervous. It's funny, sometimes things can happen late. It's really weird. For me, I'm a living witness. My first day at San Diego last year was October 10th. So sometimes things can happen late. So for you, it probably helped you not panic. Mm-hmm. When you went to LMU,
it was the same thing. So I was...
Yeah. So that probably helped keep you calm. It's like Phil Jackson in the fourth quarter, right? Like he just, he crosses the knee and... give the ball to number 23 and everything will be all right. But it helped you probably not freak out, is what I'm saying. And that's mm-hmm. important, because you just kind of kept following your model that you used before.
Yeah, no, definitely. When I was going through the whole process and it was getting late to July, people start saying, hey, you might need to look for another job, get out of the business. I'm like, I'll get some, it'll hit. And a week later, I got it. I was so happy. And again, like I said, drove down to Southwest Kansas.
I feel like that's the turning point in a career, in any career, not even just coaching, but in any career, is once you get to that point of uncertainty of, I don't think I'm going to be able to land that job, you start freaking out. And then next thing, as long as you're persistent with it and keep trying. Now, I feel like some people say they're still trying and they're not trying hard enough, but exactly to that point, like if you're actually persistent in pursuing something and consistent with doing it, I'm sure something will come along.
And you know, I also realized when I was applying for all these jobs, sometimes when you apply for the jobs, maybe a coach might really like you, but they're just fully staffed now. They might pass you off to someone else. Because I've had that happen to me where I've applied for a GA job. They end up going to some guy who played with them. 2 weeks later, I get a call for a person who I didn't even know they were opening. And the guy said, hey, this coach recommended me to you. He loved your resume. He loved how you interviewed. Would you be interested in this position? So sometimes that works also. But like I said, you got to be persistent. You can't be scared to get told no. You just got to keep going, keep trying.
Yeah. Now, I like to use the phrase, your story can be somebody else's survival guide. Mm-hmm. And if what you're saying today, which I know it will, it's going to help one person. At some point, you're going to physically be able to say to somebody in person that's looking for something and has been in your shoes. And you're going to have evidence and proof of saying, hey, this is what I did, which is how our business works, right? We pass the stuff down that we feel could help someone else. This is going to help somebody else through this pod. But then you're also, as you progress in your career, you've got some rich stuff right now, man, because there's going to be a lot of people as you get older as a coach that have been in your shoes. They're looking. It's June. It's July 15th. They're ready to push that red button, SOS, and you're going to be able to talk somebody off the ledge at some point. And that's the best part of this business is it's not so much I give you some slice stagger action, right? You can get those anywhere. Mm-hmm. But being able to tell somebody something and how to get through something that you've been through before, I think that's where the secret value lies in our business, especially when we look out for each other that way. We should do it more, but I think there's probably more of it being done than we realize.
No, for sure.
And the one thing I want to make sure to bring out too is I feel like this is a hot question, or maybe things that people don't know, is JUCO, right? I feel like people either give a bad stigma. I don't know. I can't speak for JUCO necessarily because I haven't been in it, but more Division III people give a bad stigma too. Coaching at the JUCO level, in your experience, you played in the NCAA, like coaching in JUCO, you've coached in the NCAA. Like, what do you feel? Is there a difference? Is it more unique? Is it really, it's just the same thing? It's all basketball at the end of the day.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people. They ask me, like, what kind of players you get? You guys get, like, the D1 dropouts, the rejects, like those kind of guys who mess up. And I'm like, no, we have great kids on our roster. No issues off the court. Great kids in the classroom. 3.1, 3.2 was our team GPA. There's definitely a stigma there for JUCO, and I haven't seen the stigma yet. I was at LMU, high-level D2, and now talent-wise in LMU is probably a little better, but here at the JUCO level in this conference, I don't see the difference. Some players just have a different route. Most of our guys, people just think you go JUCO because you're ineligible or you're a non-qualifier. We probably have 10 guys who are qualifiers to go D1 or D2. They just think this is their best route. And what we have here at Garden is better than probably some Division IIs and Division IIIs. It's just we have great community support. We're probably one of the more growing towns in the Jayhawk Conference. It's probably 55,000 people in this town. It's not just – people think it's just one stoplight in a subway. It's not. We got a lot to do here. But at the end of the day, the JUCO grind is real. Yes, we don't have all the nice things that the other schools have. But again, you're here for 1 to 2 years. You're here to help us win, develop yourself as a player, and then move on. And our job as coaches is to help you develop, help you win, and then help you move on. So, again, like I never said I thought it'd be in JUCO, but that stigma, I haven't seen it yet. Like I just – where we at, where I'm at here in Garden, it's – every time people bring it up to me, I tell them, no, it's not that much different than a high-level D2 to a low-major Division I sometimes.
Yeah. No, I think it – from a Division I standpoint right now, JUCOs probably have more stability one year to the next than the D1 guys do.
Yeah.
Maybe even the D2 guys. You can actually look at your roster in the spring and say, you know what? We're probably going to have 8 to 10 of these guys back next year. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many D1s can say that in this day and age. You guys can actually say that because you got some guys there by choice and maybe not by force, which is always great. But I also think you have the right approach, and Garden City does, I'm sure. This is probably what people miss about JUCOs, is that JUCOs can actually be like the NCAA G League from a developmental standpoint. If you just take the idea that, all right, this is a detour for guys, that doesn't mean they won't get where they need to go. It's just a detour. But you're developing them knowing that you're going to pass them along, right? And this is a train station. They're passing through. And so when you take that approach that, hey, if you buy in here, you're going to get better. We're going to get you right. You're going to get exposure. So that's a given. But I think when people take the right approach with JUCOs, that it's a developmental situation, then it can be beneficial for everybody. And then for you, you're still getting to meet a lot of coaches coming through your door.
Mm-hmm.
So... It just selfishly, it's a really good networking opportunity for you as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we tell our guys, yes, you're not here for 4 years. You're here for 1 to 2. But when you're here, we want you to be here and be where your feet are. Because, again, if we win and you make it to Hutch and you do what you're supposed to do, you can average 8 to 9 points a game and play at Hutch in the national tournament and you'll get more recruited than a kid who averaged 25 a game and didn't have a winning record. That's how big this conference is. I can't say anything for other conferences, but every coach I've talked to, they said this is one of the best, if not the best, in America for JUCO basketball.
No, no doubt. Top to bottom. There's no question. And you're right. Hutch is the final four of, or I guess it's eight now, right? I think it's the final eight that go there. But if you get to that point, that's as big a stage as you can be on. And if you're good enough, I was telling the kid in New York this the other day, this 6'9 kid in Italy that was at a camp. He's 16 years old, and he's only played basketball 1 year. And he's been, ironically, a discus thrower of all things. But I just said, man, if you just keep getting better in the next 2 to 3 years, if you're good enough, people will find you. And that's the thing with JUCO. If your guys are good enough, the people are going to find them.
But you have to be good enough. And that's the thing, is I feel like a lot of people think, just it's more they think they're good enough. That's the differentiator. They think they are good enough. Or people, maybe not necessarily they think, they have someone behind them telling them, oh, you're good enough, when it's like, you're good in the area. One of the first coming to realization moments for me when I was playing in high school, and you get all these articles and all this stuff and all this smoke blowing you up, like, ooh, okay, yeah. And then you realize once you go out into the world that it's way bigger. You're like, different I'm really level. Not that great.
It's too different.
Yeah.
No doubt. Your first practice at Garden City, there's some guys that walk out of the gym like, whoa. Damn, like, I've been on campus for a grand total of 3 weeks or whatever it is, and then here you go, and that first elbow shiver, or that first cut through the lane.
It's a grown man's game in this league. A little more old-fashioned, a little more rugged, actually, but it's the real deal in this league.
Yeah, for sure. No, like Doug said, there's a lot of guys that think they're good enough. Yeah, I'll be all right at Garden City. Yeah, just wait till I get there. Okay. Just wait's the word, but it's a different type of just wait. It's not the just wait that you're thinking it's going to be. but no, that's like I said, this is good for people to know. But then your story in particular, I think, is going to be terrific when this drops, no doubt.
Appreciate it.
Dan, there's one question, two questions, I guess, just to wrap it up. And it's just one thing. If you had any advice for GAs, since you've been in that role, you've exceeded through it and then obviously got out on the other side, get an assistant position. If there was a piece of advice that maybe you'd say for a GA, hey, this is something when you're a GA or when you're a student assistant, like this is a skill that you should look to master, what would you say that skill is?
Do whatever you can and always – here, let me rephrase that. If you're a GA, you need to be able to do every little job. So if a coach tells you to do something, do it the best of your ability and do it with great detail and just make sure everything's done on time. And then do a little bit more. You should be in the gym more than anyone, especially as a GA, because most coaches say, "My players are not my friends." When you're a GA, you're the closest to those guys because you're their age, and they're going to connect with you a little bit more. So, you need to make the connection with them. But also, whenever they need you to get up shots at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, you go down there and you do it. If you need to get up at 6 a.m. like Doug used to do with me, you better go do it. And don't be afraid to do all the little jobs because you're going to do them. I did all the mopping the floors, the laundry, the film clipping, not the fun stuff that you get to do in coaching that I get to do more now of, but don't be afraid to do those little jobs and do them at a very well. Because if a coach sees you do those little ones at a high clip and you do very well at it, then he gives you more responsibility. Because my jump from year one to year two at LMU, I went from a good amount of responsibility, then Jerm put even more on my plate because he goes, okay, Dan's working hard. He's doing what he's asked. We can trust him. Because that's the biggest thing. You want that coach. You want to build trust with that coach knowing, hey, he will get the job done.
Yeah, for sure. Especially when it's somebody that's not in your relationship circle, right? Yeah. Because you're earning that as you go versus someone, them vouching for you or someone else vouching for you out the door or into the door. You got to earn that as you go, which you've done really well. So great stuff, man.
Yeah, that's the other thing too, is not only are you building the skills you're built, like people are watching you when, if you go out as a GA and you're, as your example, mopping the floor, right? And you just do it, nobody asks. A lot of people walk by that gym, see you in there. And maybe there's a lot of times where they'll never say anything, but they see it. They are watching, they know what you're doing, and they it progresses, right? And you know what? Okay, this kid's been working his tail off. Let's get him a little something, or let's help him out with this, or maybe you'll give him more responsibilities. People are always watching when you don't think they are. That's a big piece that I have learned, is even when you think no one's watching, they are. if the laundry is still a little damp when you put it in the locker room for the guys, so the players are going to complain. It's going to go to the head coach. It's going to be upset. He might not say something to you, but he hurt. And it's just as a testament as the things that you need to get done and get done them right.
No, for sure.
No doubt. Being a finisher.
Being a finisher. And then the last thing, which is tied into that same question, but really this is the question that I'd always love to ask, is if you just had some advice for yourself, right? Before you even started that GA position, before you, I should say, you finished playing with your playing career, guy walks off with his broken ankle and wins a championship. You finish your playing career. If you knew this, whatever this piece of advice is, if you knew this piece of advice before that GA position, what would you tell yourself, or what could you tell yourself to help yourself progress?
Oh, definitely make connections while you're even playing. And you can do that. Like, I, when I look back on it, go work camps in the summer. Like, we didn't have D3 workouts in the summer. Go work camps. Hit up other coaches that maybe they recruited you and you still have a relationship with them, and ask them, hey, do you know anyone? I'm looking to get in the business. Email coaches sooner. That's something I didn't do. I think that's why I had to go through the send out 100 emails and make sure everything is right for to get my spot at LMU. So I think the sooner you can make connections with people and build real relationships, not just, hey, how you doing, but like actually get to know them, tell them you're interested in the business, I think it'd help you a lot sooner, especially once you finish done playing. And it can probably speed up the process a little bit.
No doubt. Said, brother.
Mic drop. Mic drop, Mage, right?
That was perfect.
Dan, first off, you know I appreciate you, my man. It's good to be able to see. Like I said, honestly, it truly is. It's weird to be able to see the guys that you have coached now progressing. It's just from my angle, it's weird, but it doesn't surprise me in the least bit that you are making the jump. I know there's big things ahead of you. You're still young in your career, so this is really the first stop out of a GA role. So your future is bright. I'm looking forward to that, but happy to be able to see you progressing. And obviously, you're killing it out there, brother. I'm happy for you.
Appreciate it, brother.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
And to everybody, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. That is another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcasts. Your favorite voices, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, Dan O, thank you again. Everybody out there, keep working and keep rising. We'll talk to you all soon. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.
Still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.